Good morning and welcome to the Raising Men Show, and I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. Man, Tuesdays are my favorite days of the week, and I have on the phone with me one of my favorite people on the entire planet. He's a great teacher and instructor. He's a great friend of the family and a friend of the program, and his name is Will Gaynor. I call him Dr. Gaynor myself just because I like to do that, and you give deference out there to people in a certain way, in a certain type, and you're speaking those things into existence, so we're going to speak that in today. And so, Dr. Gaynor, are you out there?
I am. Good morning, brother. I am humbled by that introduction. Thank you so very much.
Man, it's not a problem. You know, you've always been a history maker in my life and in my family's life, and you've always been right where you needed to be. And it could be in a variety of places, and even like a noun, it's a person, place, or thing, and you are definitely that.
Well, again, like the scripture says, even this interview right now, this is the day the Lord has made, and we're going to rejoice and be glad in it. And I'm thankful, so thankful that you've seen fit enough that I would fit the bill for your program there. And we're going to just revel in it, enjoy in it, and watch God do what he does right here and right now.
You know, and I appreciate that. Because the topic that we're still continuing with, and people, you know, have been asking me, man, why are you really digging into this, you know, history in the making and owning your place in history? But my response is, you know, you have to be able to do just that. You've got to be able to highlight the history makers. And if you're just new to the program, I got this topic from the Lord because it was a time when I was really, really concerned with African American History Month and the images that I was seeing, the popular ones, you know, the Frederick Douglass ones, or the picture that we're told that that's Fred, or the picture that we're told is Sojourner Truth. And I don't know anybody that's left that lived during the time that could actually tell me that, yes, that picture right there that they popularly show is Fred, or that they popularly show is Sojourner. But I can tell you who I know is Will Gaynor, or our previous guests, or Dr. Bill McCarty, or other guests that we've had, Tim Rogers, people like that. I can tell you who they were because I saw them. I needed to be able to cherish our life in black and white at the same time illustrating and cherishing our history and life in color. And so I've got another guest on this weekend's show who's a great, great person who my kids know, who've had impact in my kids' life, who has an impact in my life, and I hope by the end of this program he will have had an impact on your lives as well. So we're going to get right into the questions, you know, because we got a lot of questions. And for those who don't know, Will right now is actually in his classroom. So some of my guests have been able to be in studio with me, and others have started our programs, like like Deshaun Burns. He started in studio and he finished on the phone. These are instructors. These are teachers who are teaching our children. He's in his classroom right now at Vista Marietta High School, preparing his day, and he's given us just this opportunity to talk to him via phone. And Will, you need to know, I'm honored that you would even be able to take the time to be on the radio with us this morning.
Well, the honor is all mine, Craig. Again, we go back a long way and walk alongside you thick and thin. So to be able to have the honor, the privilege of being a guest on your show there, again, it's a blessing unlike any other. So thank you, sir.
No, man, no problem. No problem. It's a great thing. So as we go into the questions again, so, well, who inspires you to be better?
That was an easy one, probably the easiest of all the questions I've seen here. Family, because they're my everything, they're my everyday. And again, some days, as you know, are better than others, but the reason that I do what I do and the way I do it is because of my family. And family is not just related, not just have to be blood related. It's those who you have that kind of relationship with, that ride or die, as our buddy Bill McCarty would say, your ride or die relationship with there. And because I had that kind of relationship with a small group of folks there, that gets me going. What can I do? Why do I do what I do? Those folks poured into me, and because of that, I'm able to do what I do, how I do it, and share the blessings with others. So that's an easy one.
I hear that. And with this being early in the morning, well, it's early on the West Coast. For those who are listening to us on WKBY 1080 AM out of Chatham, Virginia, where we are on the Pacific time versus the Eastern time like our home radio station is. And so on the West Coast, this is early. I mean, we're talking like just after 7 a.m. as we're preparing this broadcast. So, and Will is already up and in the classroom preparing to teach. Well, what drives you? I mean, what's your why to get up every morning to do what you do?
Again, Greg, coming from a family that military background, dad was in the Army, mom was in the service, whatever, they were about the business of handling business. And our days always started early. Mom would come sometimes and she wanted to talk at sometimes 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. Mom, what are you doing? But she would pour herself into me, just those types of conversations, relationships that established that gainer household here. And getting things done early in the morning and handling business has become a part of a major fiber of who I become. I've always been an early morning person. Go from childhood to being that Marine officer, I get most things done the best. I function best at O dark in the morning. You know, that little chant from the Marine Corps, up in the morning with the rising sun. That's what I do. That's me, and I function on all pistons earliest in the morning.
Well, I tell you what, for those that don't know Will, the enthusiasm and spark in his voice at this time in the morning, I tell you what, it's that type of voice tone at the morning, at the noonday hour, and at night. I've been around Will at various parts, probably if not all three, Will, at some point throughout our friendship, and this cat is always on fire. I mean, I'm like, wow, how can you get that kind of spark? That comes from a place that's really, really deep inside. I'm not even sure that's even born into your DNA. But, Will, where do you get this, your fire from? Because there's got to be a day when you don't have this kind of fire. Where do you attribute this type of zeal and passion for life?
Well, I can tell you. I can tell you, my anchor scripture, Jeremiah 29:11, tells us, I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not to do harm to you, plans to give you hope and a future. Now, man is always going to make promises that he doesn't always live up to, and we kind of fall by the wayside when we expect what man's going to do and, you know, doesn't live up to his promises. Trust me, I've been there and done it myself. But you know who, the guy who put us here in the first place there, never leave us nor forsake us, never go back on his word. And Craig, I've grown in my 61 and a half years on this earth to this place, this time right now, to know that without him, I'm nothing. And it starts my day, it kicks me off. And when I have, again, I have my setbacks, trust me, brother, I do. But when I just remember what he says to me, his word doesn't go in deaf ear. It just told me, okay, let's strap this belt on a little tighter, pull these jeans up there, and let's get back in the fight. And away we go. Craig, I lived that this morning, just before we started talking. It happened right then and there. So nobody can tell me that his word doesn't got true. Nobody.
That's amazing. That is awfully, awfully amazing. I love it because we haven't actually even told your background and where you're from. We talk about, yes, you're in classroom, yes, but let's make sure that people understand who's listening. The school you teach at, what subjects do you teach, and then what do you do for extracurricular? Because I know some of them, but I need them to understand your impact in day-to-day life.
Okay. Well, I've been a history teacher. That was my major in college, and I've been a history teacher for going on 25 years. My credential, single graduate credential, is in the social sciences, so I can teach pretty much anything. But my passion is history. I live it, and one of my monikers is that we can't change yesterday, but we need to understand what happened yesterday because it has a profound impact on what we are, how we're doing things today, and that lets us then put together the recipe for how we're going to deal with tomorrow. So we cannot afford to ignore the past. And the fact that I've been a history buff since, as far as I can remember, back in middle school, it just got me. It just took me by surprise there. And I said, wait a minute, I like this stuff. And here I am now. It's my profession. It's my calling. It's my passion. And I get the gift of being able to share that in so many, some folks would say, unconventional ways. And to share me and share the blessing that's been bestowed upon me with now 25 years worth of kids coming through my classroom. And I absolutely enjoy it, absolutely love it.
Now, so your background you know, just occupationally fits right in line with our topic of history in the making and owning our place in history. You're a history teacher. Your DNA winds you up to look at the past and help it shape future. Do you see yourself as being a history maker?
You know what? I can answer that by saying, no, I don't see myself as being a history maker, but I do see myself as being a tool by which kids can use to examine the past, why things happened the way they did back then, so they can better understand, you know, what's going on today. Not so much even in a book going by a curriculum, but take that approach to life as a whole. Look, guys, why are you the way you are right now? Look where you grew up at. Look at your family. Look where you come from, why is there. And give them a chance to look at each other introspectively to examine why they are the way they are, why they do things the way they do, and how they have an opportunity to impact what's going to happen from now ahead. Our kids, especially teenagers at this time, they don't take the opportunity to view life like that. So I just take sometimes a very unconventional way of teaching that very lesson to them. Sometimes you'll catch me hopping on a desk to teach a little lesson about the Industrial Revolution. Sometimes we might be having a smorgasbord in class to teach them about the conveyor belt system. Somebody would ask, what does food have to do with the conveyor belt system and Industrial Revolution? You get them where they're at. You get those kids in what makes them tick, what gets them to see what it is you're trying to get them, and use the vehicles necessary. And that's just my weird way, different way of being able to teach this standard. And God's got me right where he wants me there, and I'm having a blast doing it.
You know, that's wild. I love that unconventional thinking. But you are actually making history every moment in those classrooms, because I'm sure you have kids who probably don't like history, don't like school in general. But the way that you've been teaching them and the way you're just bringing the subject matter to life allows them to be able to say, you know what? I remember, Mr. Gaynor, you know, I'm sure you said 25 years. And I'm sure you've had kids come back to your classroom at various points and say, hey, the impact you made in my life.
And it's so gratifying that, because I'll tell you, I put them through it, Craig. And I guess my reputation precedes me, because first day in class, I tell the kids, look, I'm going to push you, and I'm going to push you hard. Why? One, because I can. But two, a lot of them don't recognize just how gifted, just how smart and talented they are. And I look at myself as the can opener to open that can of knowledge and potential that they have that they don't realize, pour it into that bowl, heat it up, cook it up, and see, wow, I can really do this? Absolutely. And then some. So just call me the history chef, whatever you want to call me, Shay Will, whatever. But, you know, he's given me that gift. And, Craig, my wife will tell you, because we've been married together, you know, we've been friends for years there, 38 years. And she was my inspiration for becoming a teacher. I never thought I was going to be a teacher. I thought I was going to be 30 years of a retired Marine officer and whatnot there. But God's plan wasn't that way. And fortunately, I had my history degree. At the time, I had to separate from the Marine Corps. And, all right, I'm going to try this. As I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do, how I'm going to take care of my family. And 25 years later, I'm a pig in the mud.
And it's funny, because I was dealing just in the day-to-day life, and I believe the Lord gave me this word to remind myself of what we're doing. And a part of this topic is to own our place in history, because I'm sure, as you know, if you could even go back in time and talk to a person that you have in the textbook, they probably didn't think of themselves as a history maker either during the time that they were doing it. It's every moment of every day, every second, we're carving out a place, a spot. The Lord gave me this word that it's tough to see you're making an impact while life is still impacting you.
And I agree with you, because while we're trying to make an impact, which I will admit that I am, it's not about me. It's not about how I'm being viewed there. It's I got to get through these kids. I got to get to them and let them see and get to believe that just because what's written in that page, in that book or for the study, you can't afford to go by everything's in front of you. What's the word say? Study to show yourself approved there. And I even challenge them, you better not believe it just because Mr. Gaines says it. You better dig it and find it out for yourself there. And if you find something that you find that I even tossed at you, that you find a challenge, or Mr. Gaines, you said this, but I found that. You're doing what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be studying and find things that are controversial and don't make sense and asking questions. And that's when I know I'm doing what I'm supposed to do.
Well, and I'm sure knowing you as well as I do, you always doing what you're supposed to do. We're going to be right back. Going to take our first break of the morning. We're going to be right back like they see in the back of the old radio days. We're going to come back. We're going to pay some bills real quick and come right back. And again, you're listening to the Raising Men Show. And I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. And on the phone today as my guest, Will Gaynor. We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. My name is Eric Tomlinson with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate, where we design the sale of your home around you. With our nationwide network of agents, you and your family are at the center of every decision, conversation, and step of the journey to your next home. From hello to congratulations, selling your home with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate is designed to both learn and surpass your expectations. Call me today at 951-970-6727 so we at the Tomlinson Group can begin surpassing your expectations today. We want to work for you.
Does your business need to rank higher on the Google search engine? Do you want everything that your company touches to turn to gold? If you've answered yes to either of those questions, you need to contact Bright Media House. Generating relevant customer leads is critical to increasing sales and growing your business. By figuring out which online sales and social media marketing channel to use and how to use them can be overwhelming, especially when you have a business to run. Digital marketing is something every business owner and marketing manager needs as a part of their strategy. For more information, go to www.brightmediahouse.com or email us at info@brightmediahouse.com. And we're back to the Raising Men Show. And again, I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. Got Dr. Gaynor on the phone in his classroom preparing for the day. And he was sharing some great things in the first segment about his life and why he does what he does, his passion, his why. We're going to get back. So Will, I know you mentioned briefly that you did a stretch in the military and you did your degree in social sciences, I believe, if my memory serves me properly. And how did you wind up in the military? You know, is it post-college, pre-college? Where did that come from? Where did your zeal for armed services come from?
Grew up in a military family. Dad, mom were in the armed forces, in the Army, and we got a chance to travel the world there and watch the quality of life that mom and dad provided for us as we grew up being youngsters. And I believe at the age of 9, we did a 3-year stint in Okinawa. And I was in 5th grade at that time, and halfway through the year, I'd see a mom and dad picking us up, and we're going halfway across the world. February of 1968, I'm sitting in this country, little dot in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, in a country where, what is a Japan? What is this? And we're talking about life-changing environment, life-changing experience there. I've always been a pretty decent student, but it was that 3-year stint in Okinawa that really set me on fire as far as my standard of excellence in school. I will never forget my first 5th grade teacher, Mary Maroka. Craig, you probably talk about somebody that put in the fear of me. I walked in that room, person's loo, and I thought I was looking at the Grim Reaper. Oh my God, here we go. But it was through her that I learned the true meaning of standard of excellence. She was on point. Kids were snapping, too. She came in, she just would say, papers this, papers that. And I'm looking in the first week. I don't have a clue what's going on. But slowly but surely, I learned to kind of get with the program. I remember my first standardized test that I took, math test, took in her classroom, got a C- on it. I said, oh, this ain't going to work. Oh, my goodness. And over the next couple of weeks, I learned the routine, learned what she expected, and that next standardized test, I saw an 89 on it. I said, look at this. And I looked at her when I got it, and all I got is that little smirk, smile on her face, a little nod, and I knew I had it. I said, okay, here we go. Here we go. And it's from there that anything less than honor roll wasn't going to work. And that's where I got my fire, my passion for school, loving school, that young athletic program they had there for kids, for swimming and basketball and football. My zeal for life, I really think, kicked in the gear to an extent on Okinawa. And after we came back after 3 years, been on fire ever since in terms of that zeal for life.
Man, so I know for those who are not really tracking with it, Okinawa is a standard place where, you know, U.S. servicemen get sent for, you know, just positioned to be in the South, I believe South Pacific, correct? Well,
yes, sir. Okinawa is a little bitty island. It's about an hour and a half south of Japan, 64 miles long from one end to the other, and at its narrowest point, 4 miles wide. I grew up there for 5th grade, 6th grade, and 7th grade, and 15 years later, as a brand new lieutenant in the United States Marine Corps, my first duty station, wouldn't you believe, is right back on that same island. I was able to travel on the island and go right back to the same house that we grew up in, the same little grass hill I used to roll my brothers and sisters down there. And so it was deja vu, so to speak. And, okay, here we go. Here, this is the journey, and come around full circle here.
You know, I love God because he prepares a way for us in so many cases that we're not afraid when we have to come back to it. Because as a kid, your mind was probably already a lot more flexible than some of us. As we get older, we don't have as much flexibility. So he had already taken you to that place and taken you across the world, taken you away from other friends and family, and set you apart. So when you became older, your mind was already expanded in terms of, you know, different cultures, different places, different things. And coming back to it, I'm sure, well, you can tell stories of guys not quite being ready for military service when they first came in, and then being overseas for the first time. I'm sure it gets even more challenging. But you were already there, boots on the ground, and it was like home for you, or a second home. So to you, it was like,
absolutely,
oh, no big deal.
And it helps that it was a dream of mine after we came back from, you know, that three-year tour, and I said, I know this is it. And I knew that by eighth grade, I knew either a Navy officer or Marine officer, I got to do one of these. And by the time I was a sophomore in high school, there was no doubt about it. United States Marine Corps officer, that's coming. That's it. That's the one. It's just like kids know they're going to be professional athletes someday. I knew it. I had some mountains to climb and valleys to negotiate. But on December 18th, 1981, that dream became a reality. That's when I received my commission as an officer, second lieutenant, United States Marine Corps. So anybody out there that's questioning about chasing dreams and passions and whatnot, do dreams become reality? I'm living proof that they are. And I will say that dream of becoming a Marine Corps officer takes a second place to what I know is having the best friend I'll ever have, married to now for will be 37 years, together for 39 years.
How do you attribute being able to have held your relationship together that long? Because that's historical in itself. Modern day society, the lengths of time of our marriages are shrinking. Some of it's because we're marrying later. Others are because we're in such a popular thought that we can love each other for a moment and shack up and don't love each other anymore and pack up. So how you were able to keep your relationship with your wonderful wife fresh, new, and exciting to the point where you would want to be with her for another 37 years, let alone 37 minutes?
Well, again, that's a pretty easy answer. We were married on the scripture of 1 Corinthians 13:13, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Now, I ain't going to tell you that it's been all that, because we've had our moments, brother. Trust me. But you know what? As my wife and best friend has always said, sometimes you got to learn to fight to stay together. And we've done that. And we've been so blessed by it. I tell you, there's been times there, what am I doing? What are we? But you know what? We, again, it's a we. And I have to learn to get over me sometimes. Because of that, I'm thinking I'm this Marine Corps officer, I think I'm all that, whatever. I need a little slap in the face, a little humility sometimes to kind of bring me back to reality. And I don't mind sharing that with anybody. And she does that for me. And we do it for each other. And it brings you back to home base. It brings you back to, okay, let's not put things out of perspective here. Let's not forget where we come from. Let's not forget who got you to this point in life in the first place. She's been by my side through thick and thin, survived two wars. She's one of them by my side when we first found out that I was going to get involved with this little battle with called cancer. And that was back in 2001. And here we are in 2019. And I'm here to testify about it, largely because that teammate that walks alongside with me there. So that's not hard, man. And when you recognize just how valuable teamwork is, you don't hear people, they'll say that teamwork makes the dream work and all that there. I'm living it. And I have to, again, humble myself sometimes and remember, okay, this relationship is about two of you, not just one getting their own way and the other. And sometimes I have to just step back a little bit and regauge, refocus, recalibrate. Again, let's get back in this and remember that this relationship is based on two and three gathering his name, just not Will over here, D over there, and forgetting that who it was that brought you together in the first place.
You know, man, you've said a lot there that makes my mind go all over the place, on and off the question script that I'd already sent you. And they said as a journalist, it's tough to take your guests off book. But when you first got the diagnosis of cancer, how did you know and where were you? How did you know you had it? Did you have priests? Because I lost my wife to cancer. So I
know. Trust me.
Yeah. Where were you?
Well,
I mean, how did you find out?
I was doing a regular routine physical. And this time the physical indicated that my PSA was a little elevated. I said, okay, that's weird. Because I never gave a second thought there. So the doc, that was February of whatever year it was, and he asked me to come back 2 months later, and then it had gone from 4.0. We need to take a look at this here. And so we went through the process of getting the biopsy and whatnot there, and that's when we found out that even though it was in the real early stages, that we confirmed that we have prostate cancer. That's a life-changing episode when that chapter is introduced to your life there. It'll shake you to your core there. But I will tell you this, and I don't say this cliche-ish at all, the same source, six-letter source that begins with the letter C, that introduced me to cancer, six-letter word, is the same source that has sustained me from day one of cancer to February 26, 2019, right now. And I don't have any problem telling anybody that.
Wow. Well, tell you what, hold that thought. We're going to go to another break. I hate breaks, but, you know, you got to do what you're supposed to do. So we're going to do. I'm going to be a good steward. We're going to take this next break, and then we'll be right back and continue the story and get. I think we really need to flush through today. Because sometimes as men, we don't get our regular exams. We don't. And then if we do get our exams, do we really do anything about it with the information? And how do we actually stay strong? So we're going to explore a lot more of this during the course of History in the Making, Owning Our Place in History, right here with your host, Craig Carlisle, on The Race Men Show. And we'll be right back.
Who you hire as your realtor matters. You need a realtor who looks out for your best interests and not their own. Marie Clark with Allison James Estates is a full-time realtor, specializing in helping first-time homebuyers in Temecula and the surrounding areas. She is also a ministry leader. Today, Why don't you choose Marie Clark to buy or sell your next home? Please call 951-265-6259.
This is Craig Carlisle, the host of the Raising Men Show, and I'm also an executive producer of the independent feature film Restored Me.
For something I didn't do, what type of God is going to watch a man get up on his feet and then kick him right back down and get dragged through the dirt again?
It's a powerful, feel-good dramedy that centers around a young man trying to restore his relationship with his young daughter and her mother.
Talk to him just like you're talking to him.
Where have you been, kid? These people take communion from me. I am their God.
This film speaks to restoring your faith and pushes a bold message of positivity and motivation. The cast includes Gary Owen, Bill Duke, William Lee, Matt Gerald, Richard T. Jones, Malik Yoba, Yancey Arias, and Bo Casper Smart, just to name a few. Restored Me is available on over 100 digital markets, including iTunes, Amazon, and on demand from your local cable provider. Buy it, rent it. Either way, I'm asking you to watch it. It'll bless your life.
And welcome back to the Raising Men Show. And again, I'm your host, Craig Carlisle. On the phone with me is our guest, Will Gaynor. And Will was just beginning to share his story and about cancer and where he had come from. And Will, when you got the diagnosis, and I know you talked about, you know, your wife being your best friend, and you had to wrestle and fight for that thing to be exactly that, the friend that you need. And from a biblical standpoint, that no greater love than a man have that he lay his life down for his friend. It didn't say brother, sister, mother, wife, anything. The dog next door or whatever. It says your friend, someone that you chose to sow into, and they sow into you and have your back. And whether it be standing back to back or to be like the three-stranded cord and be, you know, on his side, you can see in multiple directions. What was the response? And as a couple, how did you two wrestle through and be supportive through that kind of diagnosis and change of life?
I can tell you exactly what we did on that day. Once we found that diagnosis out there, you know, we came from the doctors. That same day, we were having some work done in the backyard there, putting a lawn in for the kids and a riding path and kind of fixing the yard up for the kids there. So It was late at night, I think that 10 o'clock, maybe even later. We went outside, took a walk around the yard, and just looked at each other and said, okay, we're going to finish this. We're in this. Okay, we took a deep breath. Doctor said we caught it early, and okay, not fighting is not an option. Not fighting is not an option. And I say that not from just this cancer standpoint, but through our 37-8 years together while I was there. Been up against controversy and expected, unexpected. But the one thing that has sustained us is that we've managed to stay side by side instead of head to head. And I know without a doubt that's what sustained us for so long. I've had to recalibrate myself. Sometimes we've had to have some, you know, heart-to-heart or whatever. But there's that word, we. And that's what sustained us. And, again, that's that scripture that we got married on. 1 Corinthians 13:13, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. And here we are, some married together, married 37, together 39. Or soon to be 39, and there it is.
In that process, how has your relationship with God grown during this process of being alerted to the fact you had cancer, working with your wife and getting better? I mean, how did God really let you know that I got you, Will? Don't worry.
I can tell you, Romans 12:2, be not conformed to this world, transformed by the renewing of your mind. I had to change the way I thought about things. I couldn't afford to, because I had a family to take care of. I couldn't afford to be so self-pity or woe is me or whatnot. Not that I ever was, but we took on the attitude, we're going to fight this thing. We had to do some research, find out how we decide what we're going to get, how to get this treated, and took some hills and valleys and whatnot there, and we figured out the way we're going to get treated there. And fortunately, we had a little support, if you will, because my wife's sister had gone through a bout of cancer on her own, and she went through this organization called Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Now, ironically enough, the very place that we started, and I still go every semi-annually go get my checkups and treatments, is in my hometown of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And so every so often, every 6 months, I get a chance to go back to the hometown, outside, about an hour outside of Chicago. Basically, the place Zion, Illinois, is 10 minutes from the home I grew up in. And it's there where I get a chance to go back, get treated, checked. And basically, I guess the irony is, reflect on what got me to this place, my foundation, home upbringing and whatnot, and just to remember how I was raised, what was poured into me, has a lot to do with this very geographic background that I'm coming back to for these kind of treatments. And again, it's just God's way of saying, one more time, hope in the future, here's where this chapter of hope in the future is going to be poured into you. And so I now look back on those things and say, wow, put the pieces of the puzzle together. Okay, God, I'm starting to see what you're doing here.
What's the greatest thing you've realized that you've had to learn about this process of husband with... Let me even change it on you. When you found out you had cancer, did it change who you thought of yourself as a person? Because sometimes we as men find ourselves with an illness. We think less of ourselves. We think that our performance value is tarnished. Did any of that change for you when you found out you had cancer?
Initially, it did. Yes, I will say that. Because, you know, like I said, initially, I looked at it as a... like being taken out by a linebacker, getting hit, bang, getting knocked on my feet, whatever, and have to fight for, okay, this. I thought it was life-altering, but I realized not too long after that, getting a diagnosis there, is that, again, not fighting is not an option. And it was those times that it humbled me just from the standpoint that I cannot fight this alone. Unlike being able to go lift up weights and move this, being this marine officer and lead folks there, here's where I had to learn to follow. I learned that part of being an effective leader is knowing how to follow too. And at that point in time, for that period of time, I had to, for emotionally and otherwise there, I had to get the reins to the wife. Because I'm sitting here thinking, wow, cancer is, does it automatically mean you're out of here? And she was the spearhead in, okay, here's where we're going, here's what we're going to do, here's where, this is how we're going to lay this out. And I had just to learn to follow at that time. And she paved the way. And I just had to do, all I had to do is follow her lead there. Because I wasn't in a point to lead at that time there. I'm worried about too many other things. And she was of the mindset of, okay, like we said in the Marine Corps, follow me. I'm leading us through this fight there. And one of the major reasons why I'm sitting here talking to you now.
And you, as you got yourself back on point, have you changed the roles again? How do you get your leadership back? Is being a leader in your home and in public?
I think it's feeling equipped again to take that load off of my wife's shoulders there. Not that it's ever gone away, not that she's ever giving it up totally wise there, but I can now, then and now, kind of shift. I'm no longer the passenger. I'm back in the driver's seat in terms of, okay, driving, okay, schedule your appointments. You know what, your medicines and all the other things that go along and being treated for this here. Yes, she is still alongside there, but I it's like taking ownership of what it's going to take to fight and beat this thing. Exercise, your diet, your regimen and whatnot. I coach cross country. I coach track and field there. And part of this is you've got to stay in the game. You've got to stay active both physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually as well. Talking with folks who've been through what I'm going through, being able to talk to folks who are now going through what I have been through. You've heard the phrase, or the you got to reach back to those who are coming alongside there. God has allowed me to get to this point in my life. And now I can be the spokesperson, poster kid, whatever you want to call it, for those who are going through, and I've had that blessing to be able to speak to, speak for, encourage those who are now beginning the battle that I have now gone through for the better part of 18-plus years and still going through. But the word is going through, getting on the other side.
Man, you know what? I'm going to bypass this next break. I apologize. We're just going to blast on through there. I'm going to be obedient right now. We're going to blast straight through. When you were coming through with cancer, because I've been on the other side of the bed rail, right? The same side that wife's been on with you going, you know, not you particularly going with appointments, but going, she goes with her spouse to appointments and spends time. Because I remember several times you would ask the church, when we attended the same church, you say, hey, we're going to, you know, Chicago for follow-up. We're looking for this, you know, pray for the values to be what they're supposed to be. Pray for basically the Lord to rewrite the values and rewrite your body back to brand new. I have a different, just being 100, my wife didn't make that. So we've had stretches where I've had to really talk to God about, man, she was not a survivor.
Yes, sir.
I can't say that she was a victim, but there's a part of me that wants to say she was, but she's not. So that's, we know that's just the enemy. Help a caregiver know, from a person who has been cared for, know that at some point, no matter what, we've got to be content and accept God's plan in its entirety, whether we're here or not.
You know, we will always, and like I said, I remember my actual first introduction to cancer was my younger brother, who had a particularly form of leukemia, and he passed from a form of cancer back in 95, the same year I started teaching. Talk about a man of God. Talk about a man who was called a spiritual PhD. You won't find any better than my brother Kevin. So when you look at those experiences, it's like his experience, though I would have never put it all this together until, again, introducing my own experience, remembering him, the man of God that he was, and I always call him is, because again, you know the cliche, to be absent from the body, to be present with the Lord there. Kevin is the closest that anybody can come to being twins as without being twins with me. And talk about a man of God, talk about a man that was unwavering in his faith there, is, I know, why I'm able to stand in the midst of this storm called cancer and see, you know, the light, God that is, and those who have gone before me to lay that foundation. And I just try to do my best to allow God to use me to do the same. I didn't get here. I'm not still here because of anything that I'm doing on my own. No way. There are who knows how many people, you included, my brother, your Dr. Bills, your Tims, Tim Rogers, and their families, all of that village that we are now still a part of there have poured into each other. And as part of the very fabric, the very muscle that still dwells within me, that's allowed me to continue on the way I'm doing right now. So I owe all you all a debt of gratitude, because you all have been pumping me up, lifting me up, whether you realize it or not, spiritually, emotionally. And I never have, and I never will forget. I looked at about a week ago, that, and I think you remember that picture, that we were at a Christmas party at Bill's house, and you, I, and Bill, we took that picture, and you want to talk about the Three Stooges, but you talk about three brothers who have walked alongside each other for that long time, and geography can never separate the love that we have for each other, the spiritual walk that we have for each other. Those are the kind of things that get me going and keep me going.
You know, and it's funny, man, I've done this for a lot of years, bro.
Take your time, brother. Take your time, because these are the heart moments that we didn't expect God to. Because I'm kind of tearing up myself now that God brings it home to us like this, that we know we're in the right place. And this is one of them.
Yeah, because you and Tim were people that Sandy, you and your wives, were people that Sandy wanted me to get to know. She would ask me all the time before we knew you. We were trying to basically, like you go to a restaurant you'd never been to for the first time, trying to sample dishes and sample relationships. You're trying to find people that we could, you know, anchor ourselves to, been a young couple, right? And yeah. I remember she always just said, you know, we should, you know, get to know, you know, what do you think about Bill and Dawana? What do you think about, you know, Will? And right now, I just, and his wife, and I was like, ah, whatever, it's fine. They seem like they're cool enough people. And I'm a quiet person. My parents have always been quiet people. But I remember those days when we would have gatherings.
Yes, sir.
And would be able to, you know, call each other and say, hey, you know, it's not a good day today. And, you know, and I tell you, you know, you can attest to that Bill's wife, Dawana, she'd throw a party.
Come on now.
Her party, the McCarty parties are legendary.
Off the chain. And so, off the chain.
Yeah, and so when I say that, some people are like, oh, they can go conjure themselves up a thought of what a party in man's minds looked like. Well, you know, it wasn't about the alcohol and the people falling on the ground, because she didn't have those kind of parties. Nobody left sloppy at her parties. You came dressed. You had a good time. You ate well. You know, you looked well, you were well, and if you weren't, she made sure that someone knew that you needed to be taken care of to, so you can get well.
Yes, sir.
And it's just wild to have been through those moments. So I have to tell you, I thank you for being a part of our family and allowing us to be a part of your lives.
Thank you for the blessing of wanting to include us then, and sustain this relationship for as long as it's going on and as long as God's going to allow it. Thank you. Love you more than words can ever say, brother.
And I, you know, and I miss those parties that Dawana used to have, because they've moved, you know, to Florida. And it's like,
yeah,
it almost feels like another part of your life is gone. Because to me, going through the grief cycles like I have been, and it's funny, the Lord kind of brings you right back to the place that, I don't want to say it all started, but he'll bring you to a place where you may have run from a place of pain so you can go forward. When I saw that picture you sent me, I didn't want to look at it because I remembered that day.
Yeah.
It was probably, short of Dawana's white party, that party was probably one of the best to that point.
Yes.
And her party's got better and better, and in some cases it got bigger and bigger, because when she started doing the stuff out there at the winery, it was a whole different thing.
Yes, sir.
I remember we had the day when she had the thing under the big top too, so we came from the mansion to the big top, everybody dressed in white, and she had the band.
I'll tell you what.
Oh, and I got to DJ too.
Yes, sir. Out there doing Stanky Leg and all.
I remember that day, so the white party, we had the band, and I remember the band was so cold. That band, in fact, I'm going to play some music from that band at some point, probably either at the end of the show or whatever, but I was playing,
and, you know, and the young kids, they don't understand the true meaning of getting your groove on there. Man. Out there, bopping like we were bopping back in the day, and it was just the atmosphere and the camaraderie and the family effect there. You look around and say, man, we're a part of this.
And that's what's funny, too, because that's the part I didn't bring up. I'm glad you mentioned it. At her parties, the kids were invited. It wasn't like you were told to go somewhere and just drop the kids and come. Everybody was included. And, man, the DJ would play. Sorry, when I was playing the DJ, the band would pick up right from the song where I left off, and we would have a great time. Those pictures, and I scroll back to it, were hard to look at because those days for me aren't here anymore. So it felt like grieving all over again. It's like, lost a wife, lost the ability to have those kind of parties. But the memories are still there. From a historian's standpoint, how do you do with memories and continuing those to shape your future?
You know, that those kind of memories help you remember, help you realize that you are part of, I won't say that in the past tense, you are and were part of something that is quite unique. How many people do you know that had the type of experience that we have been able to reminisce about those when we're going through them and have those kind of experiences? Look at the people who were involved in those experiences that you can go back to. How many people can cherish those types of memories and visualize or can put themselves right in that appointed place and time where Craig was DJing, Bill and D-Rock, and we're all in our white there, on there, doing the Cupid Shuffle, whatever the case may be. But we were all part of an exclusive, blessed group family to be at that point, at that time. Who else can claim that?
Yeah. Now, Bill, not Bill, my God, I got Bill and Duana Marie right now. Will, quickly, we're running out of time. Give a word to the men moving forward so they would be able to know what they should know. If there's something you could, one thing you could tell some person with their last breath, what would it be?
Keep him first. Keep him first. Keep him first. And you'll never have to worry about second place. When I say keep him first, I don't care what you're going through. And it gets tough. You know, like the song, the old song says, when the road is rough and the going gets tough and the hills are hard to climb, I found out a long time ago, there is no doubt in my mind. I decided to make Jesus my choice, and I'll tell any man that there. When you make that decision, I tell you what, you feel like this heavenly hug that never goes away. Doesn't mean that's not going to get tough, but he's true to his word. He will never leave you nor forsake you. And I'm speaking to living proof right now. You are a brother unlike any other guy, Brother Craig, and words cannot express how much I appreciate, cherish, respect, and love you, brother.
Yeah, likewise, bro. So we've come to the end of our hour. Man, this is a very historical moment for hours like this. Well, I appreciate you being on the show. I appreciate all the listeners out there. Again, you've been listening to The Raising Men Show on WKBY 1080 AM, our flagship station. You can also catch The Raising Men Show on theraisingmenshow.com, and that's RZNGMEN. That's so, and it would be the TheRZNGMANSHOW.com. And you can find us on the various social media outlets as well. If you know a guest that you, or if you want to be a guest on the show, if you want to be a supporter, a contributor to the ministry, to the show, to what we've got going forward, you know, send us a message. Reach out to the station. They have my number there. Social media, you can direct message me. You Facebook message me. Whatever you need, reach out. We're trying to expand. The Lord has allowed a lot of different things just in the short side of 2019 to happen that have just changed my view of just what life can now be going into 7 years, the seventh year since the loss of my wife, the 6 year now completed. Things have just far been different. And I thank God for that. Thank God for you, Will. Bless you with peace and long life and health as you go along your way. I know you're going to go back and get ready for your class. This will air in about next week. So, that, well, as you're airing it, as you're hearing it right now, we've done this, those who are listening, I do them about a week in advance. So, Well, you'll be on air. I'll send you all the information as to when this is going to air, man. I love you. Tell your wife we said, hey.
Will do. Blessings to you. Love to you, brother. And those sons of yours, I hope they recognize the gift, the blessing they have in having a father and having had parents and family like the ones they're growing up in.
Yeah, I appreciate it. All right, everyone. I love you all. Tuesdays are great. Man, still the Super Tuesdays in the books. Again, you're listening to the Raised and Men Show. We'll see you all next week.
It's been a long time.
Reach up. You got it.
I'm back. This is Craig Carlisle, the host of the Raising Men Show, and I'm back Tuesdays, 2 p.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific, right here on WKBY 1080 AM and WKBY1080.net. Tune in, and we'll have real talk about real life.
Hey everyone, my name is Eric Tomlinson with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate, where we design the sale of your home around you. With our nationwide network of agents, you and your family are at the center of every decision, conversation, and step of the journey to your next home. From hello to congratulations, selling your home with the Tomlinson Group at Rancon Real Estate is designed to both learn and surpass your expectations. Call me today at 951-970-6727 so we at the Tomlinson Group can begin surpassing your expectations today. We want to work for you.